May it please the court. Good morning, Justices and Mr. Wallace. I represent Javon Lemons in connection with this appeal. I was his trial counsel, and I have submitted an opening brief in this matter. What I would like to begin with is just to mention, with respect to the facts as they were presented in this case, the facts are particularly relevant with respect to Mr. Lemons not having formed any type of conspiracy with Mr. Branch. The facts, as they are scant with respect to any agreement, any discussion, even contact between the two, other than simply being together prior to an encounter with the victim, Michael Anderson, and then walking with several other people in the direction of the victim. There was testimony from several civilians who either could have been eyewitnesses to some portion of the events of that evening or were nearby and saw some things that were relevant, but perhaps not the actual shooting. There were two girls, Tashae Briscoe and Tarika Watson, who were sitting on some steps. They saw some people, not other people, but they saw the victim, Mr. Anderson, and his friend Jerome Owens walk up. Neither one saw any physical encounter, any bump, even though there was testimony later by a Jerome Owens that a bump had happened. Nothing. What Tarika Watson described for the jury, though, and also she had made a previous statement, 3507 statement came in at trial, was that she heard Mr. Branch complaining that Mr. Anderson had looked at him in some type of way or a disrespectful way. There was no testimony from Ms. Watson that Mr. Lemons responded to that conversation, indicated anything like, oh boy, we got to go get him, or oh, you should take that up with him, or you should do something about it. There was nothing. Ms. Watson indicated that in the group of people, Mr. Branch pulled up his shirt and displayed a handgun in his waistband and put it down. She did not testify that Mr. Lemons saw it, that Mr. Lemons reacted to that, or anything other than the fact that she saw Mr. Branch do this. Shortly thereafter, she said that a group of people, including Mr. Lemons and Mr. Branch, proceeded up the street in the direction that Mr. Owens and Mr. Anderson had walked. Tashae Briscoe testified and had also given a statement to the police, which the jury heard, that what she saw also was no bump, no physical encounter, no conversation between Owens and Anderson and the group that was sitting on the steps. But she also heard Mr. Branch complaining about, again, a look that he had received. She indicated that at that point, Mr. Lemons walked away and came back and then was handed a handgun by Mr. Branch. Mr. Lemons and Mr. Branch and two others, according to Ms. Briscoe, then proceeded up the street. Ms. Briscoe indicated that she did observe these people at the time of the shooting. She heard some initial shots which had come from another, a few blocks over in the city, that were unrelated to this incident. And then she saw everybody else's hands, and nobody else had their hands up. And when she said everybody, she meant all the people that had walked up the street with Mr. Lemons. She said Mr. Lemons had his hand extended, but nobody else did, and she heard the shot. There was Jerome Owens who testified that he didn't even see Eric Branch, but somebody else named Jameel Biddle was the one that had actually been bumped into. And Jerome Owens testified that he did see Mr. Lemons shoot Mr. Anderson in the left side of the head behind his ear. Mr. Anderson did die of a single gunshot wound to the left side of his head, the base of his skull behind the left ear. Shaquille Washington testified, and what was interesting about him is that no other witness even put him at the scene, had even indicated that he had been present. His testimony was that he talked with Tashae sitting on the steps for several minutes before walking up the street with Lemons and Branch. And he indicated that based upon the physical location of each individual when he last saw them, that the person to the left of Mr. Branch was Mr. Lemons, and that the person to the left of Mr. Anderson was Mr. Lemons, and that Mr. Branch was to the right, thus enabling the state to argue that a clear inference from that would have been that it must have been Mr. Lemons that fired the shot into the left side of Mr. Anderson's head. Well, the jury was faced with deciding guilt with respect to three charges. There was murder in the first degree, and they found Mr. Lemons not guilty. There was possession of a firearm during commission of a felony, and they found Mr. Lemons not guilty. And there was conspiracy first degree, to which they returned a guilty verdict. There certainly is case law from this court with respect to jury lenity in situations where there might otherwise appear to be an inconsistent verdict. There is case law specifically dealing with conspiracy and an underlying offense resulting in an acquittal. In this case, Mr. Branch, even though he was not charged in the indictment with Mr. Lemons for first-degree murder, he was charged in a separate indictment, and he was charged with murder in that indictment. Subsequent to the trial of Mr. Lemons, his case resolved via plea. He was named as a co-conspirator in the conspiracy first-degree count. However, the entire case presented to the jury by the state was that Mr. Lemons was the shooter. Mr. Lemons, even though there was no accomplice liability instruction requested by anyone and it wasn't given, the theory would have been clearly that Mr. Lemons was the principal in that he was the one who shot the fatal shot. That was rejected by the jury in terms of both the firearm charge and the murder first degree charge. Ms. Briscoe and Mr. Washington and Mr. Owens, who all testified that he must have been the shooter, and that at least with Ms. Briscoe, who said that she saw Mr. Lemons receive a gun from Mr. Branch, that must have been rejected by the jury in light of his acquittal for the firearm and the murder first degree.
But if the jury had accepted that testimony and had convicted your client of first degree murder, would there not have been an evidentiary basis for that conviction?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, there was testimony from which a jury could have concluded, if they wanted to, that he had fired the shot.
And the jury did not conclude that, and we can infer must have concluded that someone else was the shooter.
Agreed.
And
yes,
the someone else would have been the person with whom Lemons was walking and who was indicted in a separate proceeding.
Could they have concluded that it was someone else? Yes. They could have concluded that it was Mr. Branch, or they could have concluded that if Mr. Washington was there, maybe he did it. They could have concluded that...
They could have concluded that it was Mr. Branch, and Mr. Lemons was seen walking with him, and Mr. Lemons was saw Branch holding the gun. Why isn't that enough?
Well, the only evidence, the only witness that indicated that Mr. Lemons saw Branch with a gun would have been Tashay Briscoe, and her testimony was that Branch had actually given it to Lemons. Ms. Watson said that Mr. Branch displayed the gun, but there was no testimony that Mr. Lemons was looking at him, saw that, or knew anything about it. So it's only Tashay Briscoe, and Tashay Briscoe's testimony was that he himself had it, and that he must have been the shooter because his was the only arm that was raised towards Mr. Anderson. In essence, the jury rejected her testimony with respect to the possession of the weapon and what she saw happen.
Well, if I understand your argument, you seem to be carefully parsing out who said what and telling us that because, first of all, the stories were not entirely consistent, and the jury found not guilty on the weapon and the murder. Therefore, the jury had to have rejected this person's testimony, this person's testimony, this person's testimony. And I thought the way it works is that the jury is free to pick and choose how much of a witness's testimony the jury gives credence to. Isn't that the correct standard?
It is. It is, Your Honor.
Okay. And if that's the case, then couldn't the jury have woven from these somewhat inconsistent descriptions of who had a gun and who raised their arm and who was standing next to whom and so on, that, well, we can't find beyond a reasonable doubt that this guy committed the murder and therefore that this guy had the gun. So we're dropping those two charges. But we've heard enough from the combination of stories from all the witnesses that this guy was clearly involved. You know, he was one of the ones who was walking in the group. He was standing close to the victim. He may have been given a gun or seen a gun or whatever, but basically reaching a conclusion that he had to have been part of a group of people who were about to commit a murder.
Well, a jury is entitled to weigh the evidence as they see fit and accept that which they wish to accept and reject that which they wish to reject. However, there is certainly a mechanism, which is a motion for judgment of acquittal and an appeal based upon insufficiency of the evidence to test what evidence there truly was and what facts there were. Certainly I'm aware that in a trial, argument is an opportunity to argue not just the facts but inferences from those facts to a jury. And appellate briefing is certainly designed to be persuasive, and even in the facts that are set forth, they can be written in such a way that are persuasive. What the state in its facts does is it talks about Lemons and Branch discussing revenge and pursuing or hunting Anderson and Owens. And even though they're in the facts statement, certainly that's not factual. That's argument, and perhaps an inference could have been raised in a juror's mind that that is what they did. But there is no evidence of a discussion between the two. There is Branch talking to Lemons about how he's been disrespected. There's nothing that says Lemons agreed to support Branch if the jury found that Branch did this.
Does there have to be a discussion?
Circumstantial evidence can be raised, and no, there doesn't need to be, I suppose, a flat-out statement that, yes, I'm going to help you. It can be inferred by the parties, I suppose, that there's an agreement, but an agreement to do what? There's a single shot that did result in death, but at the point at which an agreement is struck, if an agreement is struck, what is the purpose of the agreement? It had to have been the purpose of murder in the first degree, because that is what's been alleged, and a Class A felony is the only way to make a conspiracy first degree. And there's simply nothing. All that's left is a jury to speculate, quite frankly, about what would have happened based upon what did happen. And I don't believe that that's sufficient.
Let's suppose the evidence did show that, I forget, is it Branch, had the gun and showed the gun to Lemons, and then the two of them continued walking on, and then after that the gun was fired by somebody. Would that evidence be sufficient to support a conspiracy conviction?
I would say no. I would say that people are present with other people that commit crimes, and they are not conspirators or accomplices. Well, unless there's more shown.
All right. What is the more that would have to be shown?
There would have to be some type of evidence that he was supporting him in this endeavor, that he was there to aid him in his endeavor, and merely walking maybe with somebody, although one of the witnesses said they were walking, I mean, in the same direction, but a few paces apart. I guess I can't quantify it exactly, Your Honor, but it has to be more than simply being present. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, good morning. Paul Wallace on behalf of this state. I suppose at first I'd like to set forth what this Court has said for quite a long time, at least three decades, regarding how a jury views the evidence and what the role of the jury is. Not that I'm telling the Court anything it doesn't know, and Justice Berger has already alluded to it.
Well, before you do that,
yes,
would you just tell us in a soundbite what the evidence was that supports the conviction for first-degree conspiracy?
Yes. As to the agreement part, which seems to be the most contested part, there's no doubt there was an overt act. He was intentionally killed with a gunshot to the head, and that act was sufficient to be a Class A felony. So the real question is to agreement. I'd suggest that you have to look at how this plays out so quickly and where people are and what they are saying. Tarika Watson tells the police in her 3507 statement, which was Exhibit 3, Court's Exhibit 3, and the DVD is Court's Exhibit 4, that after this first initial either bump or look or whatever it was that caused offense to Eric Branch and Javon Lemons, that he says, he was grinning me or whatever. They was like, what you going to do? And then after that, they walked up on the corner. And she says that she thinks it was Branch who first complains about the offense that was taken. She hears them talking. It's just the two of them. And these are on page 4 and 5 of the transcript of the 3507 statement. At trial, she also says that someone said something about the look. E takes the gun out, puts it back, and then they go up the street together. When you combine that, then, with what Tashe Briscoe says, also, and this is B24 through 25 of the state's appendix, I heard people saying that he was staring at somebody. And then when she asked who's having this conversation about the offensive stare, she says Eric and Slug. Slug is the nickname for Javon Lemons. And the next question is, and when Eric is telling Slug that Michael is staring or something, what happens then? And her answer, after he told him that, that is when they are still talking about it, and that is when Slug walked off. He walked back upwards to the crowd, and Eric passed him the gun. She clearly sees the gun passing incident. When asked to discuss more about what they may have been saying, the only other thing that she can specifically recall is Lemons tells Branch, come on. What is clear is that the two have taken offense together. They have discussed what to do about that offense together. In fact, one asks the other, what should we do or what are you going to do? Branch indicates that he has the gun. Depending on whom the jury believed, and it's unclear as to whom they may have believed or who the gun may have gone to in the final shooting incident, Lemons knows that a gun is present, either because it's been shown to him or passed to him. There is difference of opinion in the evidence as to who fired that fatal shot. Owen specifically says, you know what? I saw Javon Lemons with a gun pointed like this and heard the shot seconds later. Shaquille Washington says, clearly it had to have been him because he was standing right there. He never says, I saw it. And I want to, that brings me to one point I'd like to clarify in the state's brief because I read it last night again. On page 12 of the state's brief, it says, both Jerome Owens, who was with Anderson, and Washington testified that they saw Lemons hold up the gun and then aim the revolver at Anderson's head. That's not true. That's not what the testimony bore out. Owens did testify to that. Washington does not say he specifically saw Lemons hold up the gun. He says, I am standing right next to him, and I hear the boom from him, but doesn't say he saw it. And I apologize to the court for that, if that was incorrect. But I scoured through his testimony. I scoured through the 3507 statement to ensure that. And I noticed there was no citation to the record after that sentence, so I wanted to clarify that with the court.
Thank you. Well, thus far, you've been answering Justice Jacobs' question, what was the evidence about the conspiracy, admitting that there was an overt act. Is there any – I'm going to ask you a question, but I want to make sure you're done telling us the evidence to support the conspiracy. Is that it?
I think that those the conversation that both women talk about happening there, and then the concert of design, it doesn't have to be a verbal act. That's this, the court and the Supreme Court have said
so
that.
Let me ask the question, and maybe you can elaborate in your answer. And what we have is something that was prompted by either a stare or a bump.
Yes.
And the state says, in response to this stare or bump, they decided to murder this fellow. They certainly weren't going to accept this stare or bump short of murdering him. Now, when the Superior Court was looking at what they agreed to do, and the Superior Court used the word retaliate. So my question is, you know, given the facts as you've outlined them, and we'll assume Branch started with the gun, you have a situation where someone is upset by a stare or a bump, and they decide they're going to go confront the perpetrator of the bump or the stare, and they have a gun. They could have agreed to go scare the person. They could have agreed to wave the weapon and scare them, or in some respect. They could have even said, let's go shoot him in the knees. That seems to be a recurring theme in a lot of cases we have. But we don't have. So we have the Superior Court characterizing it as a retaliation. We have the state charging first-degree murder as the conspiracy. And my question is, how do we get to the evidence that they decided to go murder this person as opposed to scare him or even shoot him in the knee, especially when it's predicated by a stare or a bump? I mean, it seems like a pretty big leap to say, as you characterize it, in the short amount of time, in response to an unwelcome stare, they immediately decided to go kill him.
Your Honor, as you and I sitting here in the cool of this courtroom, that's true. Unfortunately, we know what's also happening on the city streets of Wilmington is, yeah, that's enough to kill somebody and make a decision to kill somebody, as they did here. Now, the question is whether or not that was the specific agreement. And I suggest respectfully, one, the state charged that the Class A felony was either murder itself or an attempted murder, which may take into consideration shooting in a way that can be fatal, but certainly with the conscious object and purpose of causing the death. I think it's a factual question left to the jury. And the jury is specifically told that they're told what murder in the first degree is. They're told
but
what
if we
the...
If we go back, though, to the facts, you know, at least at the beginning, we know what happened at the end, but at the beginning, all we know is that one person had a gun and two of them started walking. Do we have much more than that?
Other than the collective ire of the two, apparently, in doing so. I mean, do we have one saying, hey, slug, wouldn't you like to go kill him? And the other one saying, sure, I would. No, we don't. That's true. But I'd suggest respectfully that when we're looking at sufficiency of the evidence, what the court has said, and I guess that's where I said I was going to begin my argument for three decades, is that the judge and then eventually this court takes all the legitimately drawn inferences from the point of view most favorable to the state, and that, in fact, the jury sitting through the trial, watching the testimony live and deciding how these people are describing what went on and perhaps understanding, although it seems almost incapable of understanding from rational people's minds that a look or a stare would be an executable offense. Unfortunately, we know that to be true. And in this circumstance, the jury listened to those who were present and decided, yeah, that is exactly what they agreed to, as much as you and I would not do that.
Was a lesser offered on conspiracy?
I do not know, Your Honor. I apologize. I did not. I actually looked for the prayer conference this morning, and sometimes in the transcripts those are harder to find than anything else because the court reporter doesn't put prayer conference for you, or it's done in the middle of other discussions during the trial. So I apologize. I do not know that, and certainly whatever Mr. Van Amberen tells you will be true on that aspect.
So where does that put us, though? You seem to be saying that we should take judicial notice that a look, a stare, a bump is something that could result in a decision to murder someone.
I don't believe the court has to take judicial notice at all, Your Honor. I think what the court can do, though, is say, would a rational trier of fact, looking at this factual circumstance, looking at the discussions that the jury had the view into through Tamika and Tashea, and seeing the facts as they bore out, understand that when those two decided to leave those steps and pursue them, that it was their intent their collective intent to either cause the death or an attempt to cause their death. And the jury said under these factual circumstances, yes.
But that's why I go back to my initial question about what did they really agree to do. You know, the Superior Court chose this word retaliate. If the state would have charged him with conspiracy to commit some type of assault, this would be an entirely different case. But the state selected conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. So that assumes, even if, using the Superior Court's word, Lemon agreed with Branch, we're going to go retaliate. And then Branch, when he gets there, decides to commit first-degree murder. That's not what Lemon signed up for. Now, we understand what happened at the end. But here, in this appeal, we have to focus on this conspiracy for first-degree murder.
And all I can tell the court is that that's a factual finding by the jury was that, in fact, when they left there and they go to, quote, retaliate, their form of retaliation was going to be causing the death of one or the other of, Mr. Anderson.
Well, and clearly, what's the record evidence to support that Lemons even agreed to retaliate?
Well, I would suggest
that he walked along with him.
Well, I would suggest the discussions that I mentioned in the beginning that both Tarika Watson and Tashea Briscoe let us in on about the, what are you going to do? And in fact, what Briscoe says is at page B27, it's Lemons who tells Branch, let's go out, come on. After either seeing the gun or the gun being passed off, whichever of those two that one agrees to. And I suggest that the jury certainly can infer that it is a rational inference. And again, as irrational as it may be to us because we do not use guns to solve our differences, that they went up there for that purpose because that's exactly what happened. One walked up to him and basically from point-blank range shot him in the head. And we may not understand that to ever be a reasonable or method of retaliation, but the jury, I suggest, who sits there with the common wisdom of 12 people, watching the testimony as it unfolds, listening to the various witnesses live, said, yeah, we do understand that to be it. We are unsure, and perhaps that's where Mr. Lemons was the beneficiary of not being found guilty of murder first, who pulled the trigger in the end. But we know this, that they were working together. As this court has said for a long time, that agreement may not be verbal or formal, but as you've said in Blodgett and Biter, it's proven by their acts, and it's proven by that concert of design that they displayed.
What was the plea bargain that Branch got?
I do not know, Your Honor.
Manslaughter. I got a copy of the docket.
Okay. I Your Honor knows more than I do about that. I honestly did not decide to look that up. If there are no other questions from the court, I believe that's all I have for argument at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you know the answer to my question?
The question regarding lessers, there were none requested and none were given. With respect to what Mr. Wallace has referred to as the collective ire of Mr. Branch and Mr. Lemons, I would just point out that Mr. Owens, who testified that he was the only, well, he was the only one that testified that actually he saw a bump of some kind. He further testified, though, that when he and Mr. Anderson walked off, he was not concerned about it and was certainly not feeling endangered or in any fear of a reaction. Ms. Watson and Ms. Briscoe both testified that after the discussions, they didn't think anything was going to happen. So even though the state is characterizing those discussions that were overheard by Ms. Watson and Ms. Briscoe as evidencing their collective agreement to retaliate or take such steps as would support a conspiracy, none of the three witnesses, Ms. Briscoe, Ms. Watson, or Mr. Owens, thought that anything was about to result from this bump or look or exchange that took place. If there are no further questions from the court. Great.
Thank you. Thank you both. Court will take the matter under advisement. We'll take a brief recess.